We got one of our favorite interviews from last year back on the show. Sports psychologist Dr. Harold Chinitsky, straight out of Tampa St. Pete. How you doing, bud?
I am enjoying life. Great to get back together with you guys.
Man, yeah.
Glad to have you.
Now, last time we was here, me and you talked about getting together for maybe a nice cold beverage. And I apologize, I wasn't able to get in touch with you. When I go down there, I'm always working. But I'm going to tell you something that I did do.
What'd you do?
I drove over that Tampa Bay Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Once. Never again am I driving over that expanse over that water. Ever.
Why? Just because it's so long?
I'd roll
a lot of people get nervous about it. It
nervous.
Is really funny, huh?
Nervous. Yeah. I got on top of that bridge, and I thought I wasn't going to be able to breathe. I'm like, pull the windows down, focus on the road, Tom.
Oh,
you
wow.
can do this. It's like 50 stories high.
Yeah.
And it's over.
I've been over it a few times when I was at school down there. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We go
that's
to
right.
Clear
you
Water.
Went to, yeah. You went to FC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once is enough, Harold. I done it. I conquered it, and I won't be back. Not over that bridge,
again,
anyways.
You needed him to talk to you before you went over the bridge.
I should have called you then to yeah. talk me through the driving over the bridge. McClung,
remember
can do
when
this.
You come by my place, you know, just stop on by. Back door's open, beer's in the fridge.
You got it, buddy. Sure
there
will.
You go.
Sure will. Hey, but welcome back to the show, dude.
Thank you. I appreciate being back with you guys.
Tell everybody that don't know what you do, what you do. Are you a sports psychologist, a doctor, and, you know.
As you just said, I am a sports psychologist. I have the luxurious, wonderful opportunity of working with Olympians, professional athletes, and nationally ranked junior athletes. My goal, I always love to tell it, is to be able to deal with an issue before it becomes a problem. So if I can help athletes address any issues, either on the field or off the field, that is my goal. And so it's a pleasure to be able to do it one-on-one, presenting with teams, which I do on a regular basis, or through the recent publication of my book, just to get the information out there to everybody.
That's right. You do have a book. We'll save that for more close to the end of the interview. BC's got a question
yeah.
for you.
Well, Doc, I wish I went and watched this interview that you did. I looked on your Facebook page, but apparently you did a interview down on Fox 13, and you did
yep.
an interview, and I want you to talk about this, because this is very interesting, because I got friends that coach boys, girls, but you did an interview about do coaches need to coach girls differently than boys, and I've got friends that have coached girls and coached boys, and I have heard, you know, stories about, you know, that you have to do that. So explain to us, do coaches need to coach girls differently than boys?
I might start out just by saying there is more variety within gender than there is between gender. I don't want you guys getting tons of emails talking about sexism. But when we look at a lot of the developmental years, usually 6th, 7th, 8th grade girls, you know, usually around 13, we do see that there are biological, physiological changes that take place that also then affect them developmentally and interpersonally. So girls, unfortunately, during this time frame, are twice as likely to drop out of sports than guys. And it's mainly because one of the motivating factors for girls to participate in sports is much more on the idea of the social cohesion, how they feel connected, unity, we. And that's what is really important when you're talking about working with young girls. If coaches unfortunately emphasize favoritism, body shaming, issues of that kind of harsh, cruel attack, that's oftentimes what we see with the male or boy kind of strategy. So it's important for coaches to understand that there is in fact a difference, especially when we're talking about that age range as we're starting to develop skills in school.
You'd think married coaches would not even go there as far as the body shaming, you know.
Unfortunately, we have a society that does emphasize a lot of that. Girls are much more receptive and coachable at that age. A lot of boys at that age get rather kind of primordial in their urge to prove the coach wrong. They're more likely to question authority. And so you can actually see this playing itself out, and coaches are oftentimes perplexed by it also.
Well, Coach, Doctor, I have coached boys and girls, and there is a way that you cannot coach boys the same way as girls, and That is, you can't, you know, with boys, you can get on them sometimes, and they'll, you know, kind of go hard-headed against them. But girls cry. They'll cry. They'll cry in a heartbeat. They'll stomp their foot and walk out. And so, yeah, you have to. But if you're teaching them, if you're coaching and you're actually teaching fundamentals, then it's easier to coach the girls than it is the boys sometimes.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of interesting. When you talk to the girls about overall self-confidence, it's interesting because girls will oftentimes say the victory is because of us. Boys, oftentimes, it's because of my individual skill. So for girls at this age, we have to do what's called ego boosting. You have to build them up. And a lot of times for guys, you have to ego busting because they're a little cocky, a little selfish, maybe even act out their frustration. No,
that's a little Todd, don't it? Todd needs a little echo busting.
But Doc, we got one of our coaching friends that his daughters are around 8 and 10 years old, and he's a former football coach now. He's got into the administrative part, but he still helps out with a little coaching. But he, like I said, they play travel softball. But he's still got that coaching football mentality, and he basically, when he's helping train them and everything, he basically coaches them in that football mentality. And those girls, even though they're 8 and 10, they are they're coached by their coaches. But when he's out in the yard training them, he's out there treating them, you know, he's not giving them no slack. If you want to, you know what I mean. You know, he's out there yelling and screaming. You know, and those girls are being prepared when they get up to high school. These girls, I believe, Doc, are going to be ready because they've had everything put at them already at a young age.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. So you're saying that at this level, the kind of training with this type of coach is going to be helpful in the future.
There's a difference, though, Doc. This is their daddy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is their daddy, not another coach. Therein lies the big difference.
Their daddy is basically out in the yard with them. So when they get to their coaches, you know, they've already had that, you know, I guess that little other training. But like I said, he's in the yard with them every day, too. They're out in the yard every day, 2 hours, getting trained and practice. They just don't show up for practice every day and go through with the coaches. They're actually getting their training, and like I said, he's using that football, you know, coach mentality a little bit too. But like I said, but the girls can handle it. You know, they're tough as nails. You know, they're not some of these, you know, that get upset, you know, like you see some, you know, girls. So you know, some girls can handle it, you know, better than others.
Right. We're not talking about just the individual in terms of this. We don't want to paint this picture with a broad brush.
Yes.
There are some girls who are exceptional. And also, we're talking about the difference between learning skills at a young age versus the elite athlete in the future, where all of them are exceptionally gifted with all of their skill sets.
Yes.
And that's what he's trying to get them to do. You know, I mean, he ain't being just so hard. He's trying to get them to learn skills and trying to, you know, get them to learn, you know, how to field and hit. You know, like I said, he's just, you know, he's trying to get them to.
And it eats him up, too, when the other little girls aren't performing up to their level. And it's just like, I want to shake them to death.
But you know, like you said, you know, it's just different mentality when you've been in a coaching profession instead of just a soccer mom or a softball mom or dad that's just sitting up there in the stands that's never coached, you know, before.
And his wife's a high school girls varsity basketball coach, too.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed over the years is if there's, on a boys team, if there's some guy that everybody just hates because he's kind of cocky, as long as he's really good at the sport, we'll take him on our team. While on a girls' team, if there's someone who unfortunately might be resented by the athletes on the team, even if he might be good, there's a tendency where that might distract, disrupt, and destroy a team.
Huh.
I get it. I understand.
I see that. But, you know, there could be a it could go that way with guys too, because you get these cancers in the locker room.
And, you say guys, especially, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're, you know, sometimes when you get certain guys that are getting promoted, you know, with scholarship offers, you know, you see it all the time, Doc. You know, these guys are getting scholarship offers, and their heads are getting that big. You can't fit them in the locker room. And the other guys, you know, they're wanting to get promoted. And some, like Tim said, they can be a cancer in the locker room sometimes. How can coaches rattle those guys in and keep those guys from being a cancer in the locker room?
Well, I think you're bringing up a very good point that as a system, as a society, we have raised some young adults to be narcissistic egomaniacs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we have treated them with the privilege. The rules don't apply to them. They don't have to do quite as much as other people. We've seen this, unfortunately, where universities do kind of some inappropriate things to help them kind of pass classes that they didn't attend. Individuals may do things illegally, and somehow the legal system, you know, allows them the opportunity out. So as a system, at a younger age, we really need to make sure that we're holding even the most elite athlete accountable. I have a young man down here who's on an elite AAU competitive baseball team. And when he doesn't do something the way he wants to, whether he doesn't strike somebody out, they hit a home run, whether he does something that doesn't work out well, he strikes out himself, he will have an emotional meltdown, a temper tantrum. Here's this kid who is, you know, a teenager, a young teenager, who is throwing his helmet, smacking the bat, and cursing. And I am advising his coach, he's out. You've got to pull him out.
Yeah.
And his coach, unfortunately, has such a desire to win rather than help to teach someone to be coachable that he focuses on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
When you say pull him out, do you mean take him out of the game or a few plays. Kick him off the team?
Oh, no, okay. Don't kick him out.
No. Take him out for – he's done it long enough, so it's not just the play. He really has to be removed from the game. He needs to understand that his behaviors have consequences.
Yeah.
Right now, as I always say, if you don't impose a consequence for negative behavior, it's rewarded.
Let's give a real life thing that happened here not too long ago with the Atlanta Braves. Ronald Acuna Jr., he hits a long ball. He thinks it's going out. It bounces off. He's trotting to first base like he's doing the home run trot.
Still holding the bat in his hand.
And after he gets back, Snitker calls him to the back. He don't yell at him or embarrass him in front of everybody, but he does pull him from the game.
Yeah, that was during the regular season.
During the regular season.
And then you know, you think it's over with, Doc, and then I don't know if you saw the game the other day, but
he turns around again
in the playoffs when it could be in a very important run, and he does the exact same thing again.
But this time the players got him.
And Freddie Freeman, you know, who is a very important member of that team, you know, he says it's like beating a dead horse. And this is a problem with Ronald. You know, he doesn't speak English. You know, he understands some English, but, you know, they have to have a translator to kind of speak with him. But, you know, you've talked to the guy before, and this guy is one of the most talented guys in baseball, Doc. And you know, and Brian Snitker says, I'm going to go to ends of the earth trying to work with this guy. But how many times can you keep repeating to this guy that you have to hustle and hustle and hustle at all times, and that you can't, you know, that could potentially be costing your team a run that could end up making you move, you know, to the next round of the playoffs?
Yeah, that's where I end up getting referrals a lot of times.
Yeah.
Again, I'd rather deal with an issue as young as possible, but many times I get a referral from a commissioner of the league, an owner of a team, or a head coach of a pro team. And they have this individual, and as I always say, whatever you practice, whatever it is, even if it's the most destructive, dysfunctional thing, whatever you practice, you get better at. So he has been practicing this style, this way of kind of approaching the game for years. And he's gotten very good at it, that somehow he is above, you know, having to give it full out. And like you said, you know, the ability to give 100%, 100% of the time is what he has to be able to do. But unfortunately, and this is the weird thing, there isn't a single behavior any of us do that we have not already given ourselves permission to do. So he's given himself permission to trot.
Yeah.
And as long as that's acceptable, Now, the great thing is we're the only species on the planet that can alter our life trajectory. Yeah. So if we can get him to the point where he removes or no longer grants himself permission to do that, he can change his behavior.
Say that one more time. This is because I gotta. Okay. This is a behavior that he's already granted himself permission to do. Is that correct? What
right.
you said?
Right. There, like if I said to you, and I apologize for saying this, but if you've had a bad day, would you go home and kick your dog?
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of disgusting, and you can't believe a psychologist might have actually said that. But you would never grant yourself permission to do that. There are things that you would never grant yourself permission to do. But everything you do, you've already said to yourself, yeah, I can do that. So I can speed maybe a little bit past the speed limit. You know, I could tell white lies a little bit, whatever that thing is. And so I'll take very young athletes, and I'll say to them, listen, if you could, I just want you to go next door to the 7-Eleven. Just, if you can, walk down the candy aisle. Go to the chocolate section. Grab a chocolate bar, because Dr. Shinitsky just loves me and my chocolate. Walk past the cashier. Don't pay. When you get to the door, there are these color markers that are height indicators in a digital camera. Just wait.
Just stop for a second.
just walk out the door now, and the plainclothes police officer will arrest you. Now, I'm going to ask you, would you do it right now? I've never had a kid say yes. They'll always say no, and I'll go, how come? And they'll give me all these reasons why they wouldn't. And I'll say, I'm an authority figure. Your parents have brought you to see me, and I'm telling you to do this. But you don't give yourself permission to do this. And all of a sudden, these little brains start figuring it out. It's like, absolutely, everything I do, I've already said, yeah, I can do that. But anything I would never do, I don't cross that line.
Yeah.
Well, Doc, do we have permission to give your number to the Atlanta Braves front office? Maybe you can kind of just maybe talk to Ronald when you get a free time. You know?
I would love to.
I would love for spring training. You know, maybe you could just fly down.
He's in Florida.
You can just swing down there and maybe in spring training talk to him, and he'll be a new person, and maybe they'll just keep you on the payroll. You know, or something. You know, there you go.
Drop my name. I'm a part of it. You can count on me.
There you go. And you can say tailgate talk. Yep, yep. Set it up. There you go.
Oh, well, then. It's tailgate talk. There you go. Now, we had a... go ahead.
I was going to say, if I drop your name, that actually gets me in the door. I totally get it.
That's right. Now, we were calling a high school football game here a couple of weeks ago, and there was an incident in that game where one of the kids got into an altercation with the player from the other team on the other sideline. Well, they, you know, it took them a while to get him across the field back to the home side. He was just yelling and you know, just
red
making
red.
And then whenever he got to his sideline, he, you know, jerks his helmet off, throws it on the ground, you know, toward his coach. His coach is getting on to him, and he's just mouthing off back to the coach. And so he, you know, got him directed to the locker room, and I've been meaning to ask the coach off the air whatever happened with that, if he just had to run some extra laps or something, or if he just got, you know, clean thrown off the team. And from what I understand, somebody told me that he's kind of inherited some of that behavior too.
Well, you bring up a really good point. In one of my early sessions, when I'm working with an athlete and their parents sitting in the session, I will literally turn towards the athlete, cup my mouth, but covering it so the parent can't see my lips. But I will speak in my normal tone, and I will say to the athlete, the day your parent stops teaching you their neurotic behaviors is the day I'm out of a job.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, I got tickled. That says a lot for my tongue. Yeah, Dad has a lot of neurotic behaviors.
It's a double-edged sword.
You bring up a really good point, and just think about it for any adult, not just this young man, but whenever our emotions get the best of us, whenever our emotions supersede our cognitions, you are more likely to say or do something you later regret.
That's another profound statement. When your emotions supersede your cognition, finish that
you're
again.
You're more likely. Okay, whenever your emotions supersede your cognitions, you're more likely to say or do something you regret.
Yeah, that's the
there
truth.
There you go.
We're going to have to go back and listen to this. We grab
yeah,
that
these are
his,
some serious
quotes.
Seriously, PhD level quotes.
I usually put a bunch of quotes on my Facebook page every day. I'm going to go back and write these down, Doc.
You have to get approval.
Well, I'll give Doc the
yeah. We're not going to plagiarize him.
No, I'll give him all credit.
Put the proper quotations and notations down.
It would be my pleasure to share this with you guys. It's interesting, with a lot of teams, I'll actually be brought in to watch video of opposing teams with the specific goal of identifying players on the opposing team who have problems with emotion management and impulse control. And throughout the game, we'll kind of bother that person.
Well, that's mean. That's like going to a professional. to get dirt on your opponent.
And eventually that player will do something that's considered unsportsmanlike. The flag goes up. It's a personal foul, unsportsmanlike conduct, and we end up calling that a dry stealer. And that's the amazing thing. So a lot of these athletes that you see reacting probably need to sit down and start working with someone outside of the situation. I always like to point out the best time to deal with a problem is when it's not a problem. So pulling them aside when they're not in the middle of their emotional tirade on the sport. So that's where I come in, where I have the opportunity of helping a lot of these athletes develop a skill that they otherwise don't.
That's awesome. Doc, it's been great, man. Tell us about your book. What the title of it is, where people can get it.
You got it. The name of the book is A Champion's Mindset. Specifically, 15 mental conditioning steps to becoming a champion athlete. You can get it online on Amazon and just type in Shinitzky, Shinitzky, A Champion's Mindset. If you want some individuals, contact me directly, and I'll actually inscribe the book over to them and then mail it out to them. And it's been a pleasure because I end up going around the country presenting on the material in the book to different teams, and even corporations have been bringing me in now to do corporate training.
Okay. Good deal. Maybe one day my guys at Goodyear will holler at you and you can come to Akron and I'll ride up there.
Perfect. I'm there.
That's good. Doc, once again, we've got to go, man. But, man, what a great interview, and it's so good talking to you again.
It's a pleasure for me, guys. Always. You guys are awesome. Anytime in the future, I am always willing.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks,
have a great
Doc.
Day.
Thanks, Doc.
Take care. Bye-bye.